welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Truly Amazing Woman Mary Foley believes that energizing careers and events don't just happen, they are engineered. She has combined her engineering education, her passion for inspiring professional women, and her 2 decades of live program experience to help women invigorate their careers and help meeting planners power up the live events and communities that professional women crave. Mary is known for her uncommon insights, candor, and humor. She is the author of several books, including Bodacious Career, Outrageous Success for Working Women. She's a featured blogger on WorkingMother.com, as well as a video maven, lively presenter, engaging facilitator, and event engineer who refuses to wear a pocket protector. Welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Show, Mary.
Hey, great to be here. Actually, truly amazing to
All
be
right.
here.
There you go. So we are in Richmond at our Incandescent offices, and Mary has lived here for 10 years. So we're going to play 10 questions today
show. Love it.
All right, let's go back, though, because you and I met back in 2002, right after Bodacious came out, and the subhead was An AOL Insider Cracks the Code to Outrageous Success for Women. And you told us just a few minutes ago that that came out just 2 weeks after 9/11.
That's right.
Tell us about AOL, because you worked there when it was cool. It's maybe not considered as cool now. And you started as an $8 an hour customer service rep and rose to become the company's first head of corporate training. So tell us that story.
Yeah, well, like probably many women and men listening today, I went to college, and I actually got my engineering degree. You know, you introduced me some about an event engineer refuses to wear a pocket protector. And I went to Virginia Tech in engineering. And, you know, 23 years old when I graduated, there's really only one thing I knew. And that was, I didn't want to be an engineer. exactly. So my parents weren't too thrilled with this conclusion because, you know, I was a woman. I had a really technical degree. There weren't a lot of women in the field. I could get a good role, good paying job pretty easily. But it didn't make my heart sing. And I figured that out in time, but not soon enough to change my major that I could get done without being in school for 10 years. So I decided I would graduate and then figure out what really would make my heart sing, a career I really loved. So, you know, that sounds like a big thing to figure out. So the easier thing I could figure out was how to just get a job to pay the bills. Just get started in something. You know, so much in life sometimes is, well, I know ultimately or farther ahead what I'd like my experience to be or something I want to achieve. I don't really know the first step. You know, there's a lot of steps oftentimes in the process. This one actually was pretty clear to me. I don't know what a job, how to get the job or figure out what I love, but I do know I have bills to pay. I do know I have to support myself. So I moved from my small hometown of Williamsburg, Virginia, and I decided not to go home because it was too small, the place to really build something, I felt. And I thought it was important for me to just branch out, try something new. So one of my first bodacious moves, as I call it, my BOMOs, is I moved to the Washington, D.C. area because to me it was the big city to find a job. Like I said, any job to pay the bills. And so I looked in Washington Post because we didn't have CareerBuilder.com or Monster then. And I saw this small ad amongst others that I responded to. First, you know, small company called Quantum Computer Services, looking for customer service reps to help their customers get online. And I thought, well, whatever that is. I mean, it was 1988. I mean, who knew what online meant then? But it had computer services in the name. I thought, well, I worked with computers in college. I had done some customer service through retail when I was in high school. And I thought, okay, I'm qualified. But, you know, reality is, we all know that it's the hiring manager who has to think you're qualified. They did. So that's how I started my career. And this company, I thought, well, I'll be here, you know, 3 months, just so I can get in the area, get somewhat settled, start looking around for bigger companies, better opportunities, certainly better pay. I ended up staying 10 and a half years.
Wow.
And the company changed their name in the process to America Online and then shortened to AOL. When I started with the company, there were 120 people. When I left, there were 12,000. When I started, it was a total no-name. Who knew what online meant, let alone any company associated with it? And when I left, you know, it was a worldwide brand. And it was something that even my own parents were online. So we had broken through a threshold. But truly, it was common. It was common. It was a wild experience. I can look back and say, wow, I call it my decade of adrenaline because that's how it felt every day. But in the process, no guarantees. Who knew how it was going to turn out? Not only for the company, but what about my career, right? So I had 5 promotions and 5 roles over that time, did not stay as a customer service rep, and really informed me many, many ways, both professionally, but also personally about what I want to create in life and what it takes.
Well, I can still hear that binging when you get online. Bing, with
yes,
AOL.
That's true.
You know, that
I have to tell you this one thing. So I was a customer service rep for a year. We take about 60, 70 calls a day. You know, so those 800 numbers, right? So I was involved, and over 7 of my 10 years, I was involved in call center activity, okay, on the phones, as a manager, as a trainer, et cetera. So I was around the call center all the time. But we would answer the phone. Thank you for calling America Online. My name is Mary. How may I help you? I mean, it just, boom, it even comes out right now. And about 3 years ago, I'm here in Richmond. I mean, it's been years since I worked for AOL. I don't know why this happened, but my phone rang, my office phone rang. I picked it up. Boom. I said the exact same thing. Thanks for calling America Online. My name is Mary. How can I help you? And I was freaking out. Like, where did that come from? You know? So it does kind of sink in. Yeah.
Programming. Yeah. I remember writing an article for the Washington Post about why AOL is not my favorite place to go online.
Uh-huh.
Because it kind of got annoying. You had to pay per minute.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Well, we took a lot of those calls in customer service. As I like to say, people don't call that 800 number to say, you're doing fantastic. I just want to let you know, right? They come to solve a problem.
So tell us what happened post-AOL.
So what happened post-AOL is, and a lot of people ask me, though, they say, why did you leave AOL? You know, because it was still a good career, even if it was becoming less cool. And I left because I hit the glass ceiling. I wanted to grow my career, continue to grow my career. I'd had, up to that point in time, lots of support. You had to earn your way, you know, perform. And I wasn't even getting a shot at a new position that, frankly, had been created with. And at this point, I'm in human resources, and I was heading up corporate training, and I wanted to go beyond training. And here was this new position for what's called organization development, and I didn't even get a shot at it. And I thought, what is going on? So my boss at the time was the one who really put the kibosh on that. And now I can say to him, thank you. Because now it made me sit back and go, what do I really want for my career? Am I just, I wasn't just bumbling along. I don't want to say that, but I had not seriously considered an alternative to continuing with the company and growing my career that way. And this made me stop and go, whoa, what do I really want? And out of that, I said, you know, I really do want to go into this direction of organization development. If I can't do it here, let me take a shot at doing it somewhere else. Then I said, well, let's see, what does it take? I did my research. What does it take for someone to do that kind of thing? Well, generally, I really needed some more specialized education in that field. So I decided to leave AOL, get my master's in organization development, and then I would go be a consultant, whether in a company or, you know, just someone that could be, you know, hired in a consulting company. And I was halfway through my master's degree, and I was journaling one day. And I got the inspiration to write a book. And what it really was about is putting down my lessons learned about career success. I don't know if you've journaled, I think, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so when you're journaling, you know, you're by yourself generally, right? You're writing. And I'm lost in the moment of writing. And I'm writing also like, oh, here would be how I'd start out the book. I'm like writing the first couple paragraphs of this book that, and I'm thinking, and then I realized what I'm doing. It was like I was looking at myself above my head going, what are you doing, Mary? You think you can write a book? You can't write a book. You've written employee communications, training manuals, other kinds of things. You cannot write a book. And I was freaking out inside my head, slammed the journal shut and said, oh, I can't do this. But here's the thing I recognized. that when I thought about it for the very beginning, I got excited. And when I had the nerve and the guts to bring it up to some girlfriends and say, you know, I had this crazy idea. What do you think? And I gave voice to it, literally. I got excited again. It was one of my takeaways amongst many about working at AOL was that you got to be passionate about what you do. Once you experience that, it's really hard not to recreate that experience. You know, and towards the end of my time at AOL, I realized it was a bit drudgery. It was a bit, I said I'd get up, I said I'd go to work, I said I'd perform, I'm going to do it. I thought, man, there's so many people who do this every day and have that feeling every day. This stinks. So when I got excited about writing a book, it was that feeling of passion came back again. So I decided I'll finish my degree, which I did, and I made a promise to myself that I would pursue writing this book, even if I went to Kinko's and made 20 copies for my friends and family. It was a promise to myself. I think, and when I look back, I was pretty clear at the time, I think I needed to process all that I had been through. And I did want to articulate it and maybe help particularly other women navigate their career. But it was for me too. So even if I went to Kinko's, it was still going to be beneficial to me. And then I met a woman who, professional author, connections in the nonfiction, I should say. And she it was not with AOL, but I was introduced to her from a friend at AOL. We were having dinner, the three of us. I bounced off this idea. I got this crazy idea again. She calls me the next day and says, Mary, you know that crazy idea? I don't think it's so crazy. I want to help you write that book. You know, sometimes we get, nudges from the universe, so to speak, and ideas, and sometimes we get slaps on the head. This to me was like, maybe somewhere in between, but it was like, it was right here. It was an invitation, and I felt like I needed to go down that. So in the process of writing that book, and we did get a New York City publisher contract within 3 months, and then it came out, the pub date was set, and it was set September 25th, 2001. It was, you know, they didn't consult anyone else, maybe in third world, third party countries, whether we were going to be bombed 2 weeks prior to that. But that's how it turned out. Unfortunate, but I'll tell you this. It was one of those moments when I said, okay, a lot of authors canceled their book tours because they didn't want to get on a plane. And they didn't want to tour, and people didn't want to go out either. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to do that. The first couple of weeks I had to go to New York City. Yes, there was, made no sense. But I kept on the rest of my tour. And I remember writing a post that said, I never thought getting on a plane would be bodacious. Because it was an eerie sensation the first time I got on a plane after 9/11.
Yeah, I bet. Wow. So from there to here, what are you doing now?
Well, you know, as you were sharing before when you were introducing me, I have spent, what I decided is that once I wrote this book and I got the contract, I realized in the writing of it that I am good at organizational consulting, but I am passionate about impacting individual professional women in particular to create the careers they want, to create the lives they want, and to pass on my lessons learned. And it's not only just the knowledge, but hopefully the inspiration. You can do it too. You know, there's that kind of, if I can do it, you can do it. Well, you know, we're not all built the same, but I do know this. I've personally been impacted by people telling their story, by people also not only just telling their story, but saying, well, how did you? Give me some practical tips, ideas, strategies. And so I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to make that kind of impact. So maybe I can impact these organizations by impacting the individual women. So since then, I decided to become an entrepreneur, do my own thing, have written, you know, several books, speak on them. And what's happened over time is that what I've really noticed in terms of professional women's events, they've increased tremendously. And I feel like, and I do a lot of facilitating. I found that when I can pull out other women's stories in a way that's comfortable, in a way, and in sharing our stories like we're doing right now, it's so rich. So in addition to doing speeches, so to speak, keynotes and such, and people want interaction, and I try to do it. I facilitate what I call panels 2.0, and it gets a conversation with everybody in the room on a specific professional development or topic that is of importance to professional women, and help them tell their own stories to one another and share ideas and inspire one another. So that's really where I spend most of my time and I'm focused right now.
Very cool. So tell us, what does it mean to be bodacious?
Oh, yeah, I know. We keep throwing around this term here. Well, when you look up bodacious in the dictionary, you'll hear words like, or look, you see words like bold, outstanding, remarkable, audacious. You won't find tatas. Just getting it out there for disclaimer. But that's what the word really means. And for me, it was actually the same friend. My name is Tian, who is still a friend today, but at the time we worked together in the human resources department of AOL. She saw me as I was trying to, struggling with this. Hey, I can't get this promotion or navigate my career, you know, not an aside, but at the same time, parallel in my life, I'm going through a divorce and having a really difficult time with my, was going to be my ex-husband. And, you know, I'm trying to sort through it all. And she saw me struggling and she goes, here, Mary, I think this book may be helpful. And the title of that book was The Bodacious Book of Succulents.
Excellent.
Let that sink in, right?
Yeah, right?
Well, it's really about self-care, which I needed to do more of. But that word bodacious just popped out. And here's what I love about it. I mean, it's fun to say. You know, I was like, you know, you can say bodacious or you can say bodacious. I mean, you can say it fast or you can say it slow, but you cannot say it without cracking a smile on your face and other people. And so I used it as my personal rallying cry. And which, by the way, that manager of mine at the time who didn't give me the shot, he was like looking at me. He just didn't know what to do with me. And I started using this word too even more. So anyway, for me, I have defined it as positive gutsiness. That's really what it comes down to. Obviously, men can be bodacious too. There's a far more of a female connotation. Most of them don't consider themselves necessarily bodacious than maybe audacious. But I will tell you, in my research of the origin of bodacious, and I can't say this actually is the origin, but I did stumble upon that there was a Celtic queen in what we now know as London, England, you know, that area of the world on that island, and her name was Boudica. And when you see the spelling, it's Boudicca. Now, sometimes there's a slight variation of it, but you look at that, and she was a gutsy queen. So she and her husband, a king, and, you know, it was tribal then. And the Romans under Nero had overtaken London. They were ruling, expanded their Roman Empire. So, you know, here they're the largest empire of the day, right? And what happens is the king dies, and then the Roman soldiers come out to take all of her tribe's land and take all their possessions away. And she protested. No, no, no. Well, they didn't like that answer. The Romans generally didn't. They actually raped her and her two daughters.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so let's... And so she got really pissed. She led a war against the Romans.
Fantastic.
Rome.
Yeah. There you go.
And today, she did make a dent. She ultimately didn't... The tribe did not win. But in the process... the cities of London and Colchester burned to the ground. I mean, she put up quite a fight. And if you go on the River Thames today, literally across English Parliament is a bronze statue of Queen Boudica, or Queen Bodacious, as I like to call her. So I think that maybe some of her descendants and that idea came to the United States, probably the southern United States, because they also think that it's a combination of the words bold and audacious. So there you go. Either one, it works for me, but mm-hmm. I like the gutsiness.
I like it too. So let's just look inside your book a little bit. Some of the things that you suggest are take a stand,
mm-hmm.
chapter 3, thrive on shift and change. So talk a little bit about the inner workings of your advice.
Well, my book, Bodacious Career, really is my major lessons learned about career success. And so as I was sorting through that myself, well, what would I say, you know, if a woman said, well, God, what did you learn? What should I remember? And obviously, take a stand and thrive on shift and change were two of the ones that I came up with and determined. Take a stand is important because I was learning to have the guts to do it. You know, particularly women, and I talk, as you know, in the book about being a good girl. And good girls are, you know, and how many of us have been raised to be good girls? And by the way, you know, I'm not going to knock any parent who does that, because it was, you kind of had the, you know, on the continuum, it was good girl or, you know, the other B word, mm-hmm. right? And nobody wanted their daughter to be grown up as the other B word. And I didn't want to be that either. I didn't want to be the bitch. I mean, she was always angry, you know, didn't have any friends either. But the problem with the good girl is that you end up getting told basically in so many different ways, shapes, or form to, you know, basically put others' needs before yours, don't rock the boat, and things where, you know, even the phrase, be a good girl. Oh my gosh, it's not like you want your parents or parents today say to their daughters, be a bad girl either, right? But there's something about, you know, tone it down, you know, be quiet and such, that this thing of not even talking back disrespectfully, but the thing of, well, what do I want and how do I bring voice to it? And if you're not at a young age given the space and the encouragement to do that, particularly as a girl, you know, you fast forward, why would you suddenly have it now that you're 25 years old working in a company, or 35 or 45? I mean, chronological age does not necessarily guarantee that you're any got any bigger of a voice and feel better about yourself and the strength to do that. I learned in my experience with AOL, but that this pressure to perform and change, that if I wanted I had some ideas. I had to voice it. It's simple as it is. I think the thing that keeps us back is, particularly as women, is, well, what if people don't like it? What if I get pushback? You know. And I think, particularly in my 20s, I was far more sensitive to that than I am now. Mm-hmm. Thicker skin, that type of thing. But the take a stand came more from not just taking a risk to come up with an idea. It was when I was feeling like, wait a minute, I'm not being treated right by, you know, my supervisor or by a coworker. And so what am I going to do about it? And I think that there's something very empowering when you, and I decided, you know, I could go whine. Okay, here I am. I could go tell my boss because I got a coworker problem and such. But, you know, maybe I should, before I do that, I could go to human resources. Why don't I see if I can deal with this directly and be an adult and be responsible? So I remember one time there was a male coworker, and he was a little older than I was. And I'm only 5'2", as you know, sitting here, you can tell. I can look you in the eye. But, you know, most men are taller than me. And he was probably 6 foot. And it just seemed as though he had this habit of getting in a doorway and looking down at me. I mean, literally, okay, so he probably couldn't not look down because, you know, I'm shorter. But he made a number of sexual remarks and comments that I did not at all ask for. And, first of all, it made me uncomfortable first time. And I'm like, did he really say that? You know, kind of thing. Then I just kind of got pissed. You know, I get kind of angry, like, because it felt disrespectful. Because maybe he didn't think it was. I don't know. But all I knew is I did not like it. And I knew it wasn't appropriate. I was married. And, you know, it was one of those things, like, where in your universe do you even think this is acceptable behavior? So talk about uncomfortable. I thought, okay, Mary, all right, you got to go and deal with this. So after it's happened 3 or 4 times, I knocked on his door, went into his office, sat down. Now, I had thought about, that's what I recommend, think about what you're going to say, because, you know, it's really difficult to come off the top of your head. Mm-hmm. So I did. I thought about what I was going to say. These things happened. This is how I felt about it. Here's what I'd really appreciate you not doing XYZ anymore and such. Oh, you know what? I mean, he was at his desk and I sat down, right? So I wasn't doing this physical stance, like leaning in and, you know, power pose. All right, I'm going to treat you with respect because this is what I'd like in return. But here's what it looks like for me. And that was taking a stand. And, you know, he immediately, oh my gosh, it was like calling his bluff, and he was embarrassed. He apologized. He didn't want to talk about it too long, and that was fine. I didn't either want to stay too long either. And he couldn't even look me in the eye going down the hallway for a good 6 months. But I knew his name. I'll call him Brian. And every time we passed, I'd go, hi, Brian. And that's all I did, right? And after a while, he realized, okay, she's not going to make a big deal out of it. I'll know how to now respond or what's appropriate. Because, you know, let's face it, I could have gone to HR. I could have made a bigger deal out of it. But I think more than anything, he was just embarrassed. And I had to go, well, listen, yeah, it is a form of rejection in a way, right? Because he's throwing out these things. I don't know if he wants a date. I don't know if he wants a, you know, an affair. I'm not interested. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry if he's uncomfortable. He's made me uncomfortable. That's the kind of thing. That's an example of taking a stand. And that's obviously in the workplace. But what if there you have a project? What if you're, or what if you're on a committee of a project team and you really don't agree with a decision that's being made? Taking a stand doesn't necessarily mean you get your way, but it does mean you value your opinion and your thoughts and your ideas enough to make it known. And that, to me, is taking a stand.
That's fabulous. And there's so much great information in Bodacious Career, Bodacious Women, and Bodacious in AOL Insider Cracks the Code to Outrageous Success for Women. Just a couple more questions.
Sure.
So looking back, what advice would you give your 25-year-old self?
That I haven't already given.
I know. Like, what do you wish you had known?
Yeah, I think if I had a 25-year-old woman today sitting across from me, I would say you have to, her career, right, in her work world. I think college and other vocational training teaches you a lot of the technical things you need to know and information. So it's not all technology, and it equips you in a big way. But it does not equip you for you taking your own lead on how you want to show up every day and interact. And you, even though you're young, and even though you're female, yes, you have an opinion and you have voice and you have ideas. And many women today of that generation have been taught that and believe that. But here's the other aspect. You have to really demonstrate, and if you want to get respect and be valued, respect is a lot also about how you're valued as well, in the organization and how you treat others. So I think it's a two part here. One is, great you have a job, great you have skills, great you have college education. So what? Mm-hmm. This organization hired you to produce results, to create, to make something happen. Always be thinking, what's in it for them? It's simply smart. And be asking yourself, what are the objectives? What are the goals for my boss right now? What is he or she, what are they being held responsible for the next 3 months, the next 6 months? Then ask yourself, what can I do in my role to help them accomplish that? And then is the magic sauce. If you've done that, which is hugely a step forward than a lot of your peers, your age peers, you have to communicate activities that you're doing to actually help them move to your boss, to your manager, what you're doing to help them achieve their goals. Do not assume they pay attention enough, that they connect the dots enough, and it is not because they're evil people or they're ignorant. A lot of times, even the best managers, they are so strapped for time. And they can't, you don't even want them breathing down your neck anyway. So what I started to do at AOL was every week, even though I wasn't asked, I sent an email to my boss and I said, hey, I want to let you know, here's the things I've done today. But I didn't have a laundry list of my activities. I would make categories based on their goals. Two or three big initiatives. That's one. The other is, and that's particularly helpful, that's demonstrating I am adding value and contribution every day. The other is how you treat your coworkers and anyone, whether they're in a higher rank above you, the same, you know, peers or below you. And when you treat people the way you want to be treated, I know it sounds like a golden rule thing, and you act as if I'm responsible, I got this position, you treat them, you acknowledge their contribution, you ask for their opinion and their input and stuff, it is amazing how much they think you're brilliant. And you may or may not be as brilliant as they give you credit for, but All of us want to be appreciated. So when you appreciate others first, it goes a long way that when you've got to work on a project with them, when you've got to ask for information from them, when they may be a hiring manager and they've got a new opening, guess who they may be thinking of first? Because they're going to want to hire people who perform and, frankly, are easy to get along with.
Excellent. Yes, very, very good advice. So last two questions. What do you love most about being a woman in the business world? And what do you...
what do you love most? Here's what I love most right now about being a woman in the business world. And, you know, it's funny because no one's asked me that question. I think that's a great question. But it goes back to Bodacious, is that I could call it get away with. I, as a woman in the business world, can... I think I have a larger bandwidth of style and expression and creativity and kind of being a little bit zany sometimes. Saying the thing that maybe, you know, and using humor that others aren't saying in the room because they're not as comfortable with it, or the male culture is, we don't go there. Mm-hmm. So I think I, as a woman, I can, quote, get away with a little bit more. Not I don't abuse that, because that doesn't mean I just say whatever I want and it's going to be valued. I'm simply saying, because I think I can be a little more bodacious in business, and I just get some slack. It's just a wider envelope, like for me. So that's what I love the best. What do I like the worst or the hardest? We've come a long way, baby, as the Virginia Slims, mm-hmm. here in the Richmond Capital. And yet we still have a good ways to go. I think the thing is there's kind of, I enter the two ways, two sides, you know, because there are men and there are women, obviously, in the workplace. And I think what I get challenged by sometimes in terms about men is, I could say be taken more seriously, but I'll just put it this way. I think I surprise a lot of men in business sometimes. I get the sense they're not anticipating that I'm as perhaps thoughtful, strategic, or serious. Okay? So, you know, I can sometimes get a little bit like, oh, God, here we go again. But I will say I turned that around to my advantage. I decided mentally to go, okay, this is great, because then I can surprise you. I can over-deliver in your way, you know. There still is this, I would say, good old boys club in a way. I think, and we've had a little bit of this conversation, I think, hope, but I'm not too stressed, honestly, right now about the generations of women who are coming up, those in their 20s and those in their 30s. Because by the time they get into higher levels of positions, a lot, I think, this thing of the good old boys club will have gone away and just dismantled, because that generation of men will have retired out. So I've just decided at 50 years old to say, you guys are just so hilarious, and you're funny, and you're cute, but you're not going to last forever, so we're here to take over. You know, so that to me is, I think, part of it. And I can't remember what the second half of what I was thinking of, so there you go.
Well, I think that's part of being a truly amazing woman. You get to say what you think at the moment you're thinking it. It's all good.
Or a truly talking on woman.
No, well, Mary, you are awesome. Thank you so much for being with us on the Truly Amazing Women Show. And we also want people to check out your 50 tips for why 50 is fantastic.
That's right. No, 50 reasons why turning 50 rocks.
Okay.
Which
even
is also
better.
Tips.
Yes,
right.
Which is really good. And you know that succulent thing. I kind of like that idea.
One?
I like
yeah,
that
I
too.
Can...
So maybe that's a strand for you to
And I don't think you have to be 50 to appreciate it. I've had some women who are younger than 50 go, oh my gosh, I love some of these things on this list.
Yeah.
And then there's women who are older than 50. Do I have to be 50? I'm like, no. So women who haven't turned 50, here's what to look forward to. And the women who are 50 plus, they just nod their head like, oh yeah, I get it.
So great. Well, happy birthday. Happy 50.
Thank you.
And quickly tell our listeners what you're doing for your birthday.
Oh, well, when I turned 50, which, you know, and this recording as of today was literally 2 weeks ago, it was simply the launch of a year-long celebration. And a big highlight of that is I'm going to do something I've never done before, big dream. It's a BOMO, bodacious moment. Taking a month sabbatical, going to Italy.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you'll have to come back afterward and tell us what you learned from that experience.
I will, unless I meet Fabio, and then I'm just kidding. Okay.
butter, that kind of. All right. You are listening to the Truly Amazing Women Show. We are with Mary Foley, author of Bodacious, Bodacious Career, Bodacious Women, and something we didn't talk about your nails. So we'll get into that next time.
Okay. Sounds good. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Hope Katz Gibbs. I'm your host, and we'll talk to you soon. All right. That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.